I'm nutritionist at St. Luke Medical Center, and I'm speaking on recent advances in nutrition. I'm going to make this really informal. I don't have a speech prepared for you, because I could give you an hour's worth of speech and it wouldn't be something you wouldn't even want to hear. So I'm going to ask you some questions, do a little survey on fat, which is a hot topic in our country today, and ask you a few questions, and then I'm going to let you ask me some questions, and we'll dialogue together today. I'll give you a little bit of my background for those of you that weren't here for the orientation meeting. In addition to being the nutritionist at St. Luke, I'm just about ready to complete my master's in nutrition at Bastyr College in Seattle. For those of you that are not familiar with Bastyr, it's a naturopathic medical school. So my orientation is toward whole foods, food as healing and food as prevention and so forth. I also received a grant last year to do research on nutrition as an adjunct to cancer treatment. And I'm in the process of refinishing and editing that project. So I learned a lot about nutrition and prevention of cancer. And I'll throw out a little bit of information regarding that today, too. And if I don't hit on some of the aspects that you want, ask me. I'll be glad to answer any questions. And you chime in and feel free to disagree and feel free to add what I miss. And we'll just have a great time. I'm going to give you a quiz, first of all.
Pop quiz.
This is a pop quiz. That's right. According to the dietary guidelines for America, I want to see if you've learned your lessons. No. So I have no handout, and I have no pieces of paper for you to score, but you can make a mental note because this is a short quiz, so it's not a big deal. But this will give you an idea of your fat score.
Oh, no.
How often do you eat deep fried, deep fat fried, or breaded foods? I'm interested in 3 to 5 times a week or almost daily. So give yourself 1 point if you do that. Fatty meats such as bacon, sausage, luncheon meats, heavily marbled steaks, and roasts. For all of these, it's 3 to 5 times a week or almost daily.
And what if it's not? Then you get nothing.
You don't get a point for that.
Well, you get 1 point.
1 point for each of them. This is point number 2, and if you do this, you now have 2 points.
Okay.
Is that clear?
Does that include the low-fat turkey lunch meat deals?
Low-fat turkey, no. Low-fat turkey wouldn't fall into that.
What about if you just eat bacon seasonally when you've got tomatoes?
Oh. That falls into the seldom or never.
It's called rationalization.
Okay, well, I'll read these again quickly. The first point is deep fat fried, or breaded foods. If you eat those 3 to 5 times a week or almost daily, you have now 1 point. For point number 2, fatty meats such as bacon, sausage, luncheon meats, and heavily marbled steaks and roasts. Again, 3 to 5 times a week or almost daily. If you do that as well, you now have 2 points. Whole milk, high-fat cheeses such as cheddar and Munster and Monterey Jack and that's another category. Anyway, high-fat cheeses. Basically, low-fat cheeses, mozzarella, farmer cheese, string cheese. Can you think of another one?
Cheese Whiz.
Cheese Whiz. Oh, that's a high-fat one. Okay, and ice cream. So this is point number 3. If you eat any of those often, you have 3 points.
You mean 3 to 5 times a week?
Uh-huh.
Ice milk,
no. That should be low-fat. High-fat desserts such as pies, pastries, and cakes. That's number 4. If you eat that often, 3 to 5 times a week or more, you now have 4 points. Sauces and gravies. If you eat that often, you now have 5 points. Salad dressings made with oil and mayonnaise. If you have that often, you now have 6 points. And the seventh one, whipped cream, table cream, sour cream, and cream cheese. If you eat that often, you're up to 7. Butter or margarine on rolls, bread, toast, vegetables. You're clapping. Yay! Yay for butter.
Did you get that?
I'm about to. That was the last one. 8 points. Okay, your score is, I love this. If you have several responses, what is several? Actually, you're concrete, 2, 3, but anyway, several. Then you're in a high fat category. So I would say 2 or 3 or more. You're up. You're getting up there. I'm there. So I like butter. So and salad dressings with oil. So some ideas for that. You could add for like mayonnaise, put in low fat yogurt in with mayonnaise as a salad dressing, mix the two together. For salad dressings made with oil, put in less oil and more vinegar or lemon juice. Any other ideas that anybody else wants?
Low-fat mayonnaise is really that much of an improvement?
I haven't really looked at them. I would be very curious to really analyze it. That's another thing on labeling. Labeling can be very misleading when they say this is a low-fat item. If you eat half a teaspoon, it's low fat, you know, or some strange thing. They'll give the fat percentage for a small little portion of that package or whatever, a small fraction of what would be a normal serving.
Also, Japanese vinegar just on salad is delicious, and it's sweet, and it's a lot sweeter than normal vinegar, and you just eat it straight, and it's delicious.
What kind of vinegar?
Rice vinegar.
Seasoned rice vinegar.
Yeah, they actually have 2 different kinds, and it says pour salads on one of them, so I'm wondering.
I have one more quiz. This is a short one on cholesterol. This is a true or false. Fruits, vegetables, and most breads and cereals have little fat in them. Is that true or false?
Really?
Fruits, vegetables, and most breads and cereals have little fat, very little fat.
True.
That is true. Fruit contains cholesterol. Is that false or true?
False.
Chicken without skin contains less fat than chicken with skin. This is basic, isn't it? Cholesterol is found in both the lean and fat of meat.
True.
Skim milk has almost no fat.
True.
Cholesterol is found in both egg yolk and egg white.
False.
Mozzarella cheese, which is part skim milk, has less fat than natural cheddar.
True.
Chicken is a better choice than lean beef or pork to moderate dietary cholesterol.
True.
That's false. Only trick question. Chicken is a better choice than beef or pork, and it's false for cholesterol.
All beef or just certain kinds of beef?
They're not distinguishing here. But as far as cholesterol, between chicken, pork, and beef, chicken isn't better. These are according to the dietary guidelines. So I have some more questions. This is the way I get dialogue going. I ask you a few questions, and then you can ask me.
One thing I hope you discuss is the difference between the types of cholesterol.
Like versus eggs, the cholesterol in eggs versus others, yes. I've been
discussing
HDL. Oh, you mean in the blood? Okay.
Everybody seems to know that fat's a terrible thing, but doesn't your body have to have some fat?
It does. Yes, we do need some fat, and you don't want it to cut it out. The guideline is now the dietary guideline is 30% of your diet should be fat, approximately 55% should be carbohydrate, and 15% protein. And of the fat, the recommendation is that no more than 10% of it be saturated fat. 10% should be polyunsaturated and 10% monounsaturated. That might be a good idea just to go over that briefly. Okay, let me just read to you because it's easier for me to read this than to remember it. Here it is. In the saturated fat category, animal fat, milk, cream cheese, butter, meat, and poultry, and also coconut and palm oils are in the saturated fat category.
And what percentage was that again?
10%. In the monounsaturated fatty acids, they are both plant and animal origin. Olive oil and peanut oil are the most common examples of fat in the monounsaturated. Margarine, and hydrogenated vegetable shortenings are in the monounsaturated. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to interrupt this for a minute. What do you think is better, a better choice for your health, margarine or butter?
Butter.
Butter. You're right.
Now explain the difference.
This last summer when I was doing research for my cancer project, I started running across a lot of articles from the medical journals regarding an item called trans fatty acids, which are found in high degree in margarine. Usually 40 to 50% of your margarine is trans fatty acids. There is a strong link between that type of acid in cancer, that fatty acid in cancer. And so the consensus now is that margarine should be eliminated, and if you're going to put something on your bread or your vegetables, that it be butter. Even though you should limit it and make it a small amount, it's better to choose margarine. I mean, butter than margarine.
Yeah. I had a friend that we went to dinner with this guy. He is a naturopathic physician. And he sat there and went down the list of items, food items and condiments that were on the table. And it's amazing how much he was really against, as soon as he found anything that said partially hydrogenated. Mm-hmm. Explain what that does to your system. Why is that worse than the natural fat that it replaces?
Well, again, partially hydrogenated is a process. It's a process of heating an oil or a fat to a very high temperature. And in that process of heating, an item is created called trans fatty acid. It's an item that is not found in nature in large quantities, right?
In small quantities.
No, it doesn't. And now they're finding links with cancer and high quantities of items containing trans fatty acids. In one of the studies, that it was a retrospective study, they found that people on the prudent diet through the 70s that were eating supposedly low cholesterol foods, a lot of polyunsaturated products, and cutting out or cutting way back on saturated fat, had more incidence of cancer in those groups than the control group that did not cut back on saturated fat.
It became sort of discouraging because I'm sure those individuals were doing what was at the time being prompted as the thing to do for your health. And now we're swinging back. I mean, I'm sitting here absolutely amazing because I really didn't know butter was better than Fleischmann's margarine. I mean, we were dedicated to trying to keep the most appropriate thing on the table.
Yeah, and doctor told us to use Fleischmann's.
I hardly ever think of bringing home butter, although I like the taste of it. So I get really frustrated with this whole back and forth. Kind
of well, we were sold a bill of goods, too, the margarine industry. We could talk about that. Sherry knows.
We should talk about that a bit.
There's a political part to this.
It was very interesting. I found two studies. They were both, I believe, 1956. And the first study, if I'm remembering my facts right, was by Sinclair, and he found that this new corn oil margarine and the corn oil products that were being, the new margarines, it wasn't corn oil, it was just the new margarines were being touted as very healthful. And in his studies, he found that they were having a very adverse effect on the body, and he published a study. Within the same year, somebody else came out with a study right after that pointing to the fact that corn oil lowers cholesterol, and that was picked up and highly advertised and publicized. The media picked it up, and I've often wondered who funded that corn oil study and why it came right on the heels of this other study. I'm sorry. That was pointing to the hazardous effects of margarine. So
aren't we talking here between whether you want to get cancer or a heart attack? assuming you're going to eat a pound of butter or a pound of margarine, if your family had a history of heart attacks, wouldn't you prefer to eat the margarine and chance the cancer in the meal?
Well, there's a man by the name of Wayne Martin who's done a lot of study in this area, and he's the one that I've seen the most work from in this subject. He's looked at, in retrospect, to post-World War II, and heart attacks, mainly in Europe. He's looked at Ireland and I forget which other countries. and found that there was less incidence of heart attack when people during the war over there went to butter. His theory is that margarine is a contributor to heart attack as well as cancer, and that we have totally been sold a bill of goods, and that it really is not the margarine aspect or the butter aspect, but that there is a whole, how should I say this, that there are many aspects that come into play for heart attack, mineral shortages, lifestyle, sedentary lifestyle versus getting a lot of exercise, a lot of other foods that come into play. Anything else you doctors want to add to that?
Smoking, alcohol.
Yeah, stress. Butter's a natural food. Margarine's a fake food. There are enzymes in it, lipase, which degrade it naturally. So I would say all things, like you say in Norwegian, alting menta mota, all things in moderation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And shouldn't have a pound of butter or margarine.
Oh, yeah.
You
know,
But if you're going to choose a pat.
Choose a pat of butter.
Rather than
margarine pat. Industry is going to get after you.
They're going to come after me. So, on the last one, polyunsaturated fatty acids, I'll go back to the third fatty acid. It's found in large portions in the plants, in the plant kingdom. Sunflower, corn, soybean, cottonseed, safflower oils, all the vegetable fats are high in polyunsaturated, and fish. So again, between saturated, monounsaturated, and polyunsaturated, 10% is a goal for each of those.
Which group is better? If you're making a choice, which type of fat?
Well, there's a lot of studies now, and a lot of people are looking at the polyunsaturated, primarily the fish oils in lowering cholesterol. You've probably heard about omega-3 somewhat. And so there's a lot of talk about that right now, and a lot of people are looking at fish oils and cold water fish, fatty fishes, as being very beneficial in lowering cholesterol, prevention of heart disease.
Do you comment on the things that one can consume that will stimulate lowering of cholesterol?
Yes. Well, oat bran is probably received a lot more press than it should have, and it's helpful, but there are other things, certainly vegetables and fruit, fresh vegetables and fruit, the fiber in that is very, very beneficial, and a large portion of the carbohydrates in our diet should be from fresh fruits and vegetables and legumes, whole grains. Garlic, onions are beneficial. You would want to make sure that you didn't have mineral imbalances, mineral shortages. Anybody else with anything else to throw in there? It's beneficial?
Well, I don't know if it's true, but I have found that exercise really helps lower cholesterol as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Just drinking a lot of water and exercising seems to have a great impact.
Yes, definitely. It's a very important aspect.
Sweets. We found that refined sugar has an adverse effect on cholesterol as well.
Sugar?
Especially triglycerides.
Yeah, triglycerides especially. Mm-hmm. Biochemically, it's very complex.
It's when you say it has an adverse effect. You know,
raises it.
It raises it.
Adverse, yeah.
It's one aspect of fat in measuring cholesterol in the blood. It would be one aspect, one category.
Well, I have a question that this whole margarine butter thing is raising, which is, what are you supposed to put on popcorn?
Parmesan meat and herbs.
I mean, are there any tasty things if you're not supposed to put
herbs?
Well, you can Lowry salt. We've got a lot of ideas here. Yeah, some people love brewer's yeast on it. Some people like seasoned salts. Any other ideas? Anybody else have Parmesan?
Sure. I have a question. I ate about 6 pounds of nuts a month. And what do you think? Walnuts. You know, I'm really into walnuts. Is you
walnuts, omega-3.
Probably 5 pounds. About 5 pounds, probably average. Eat them on my cereal.
Uh-huh. Well, they're high in fat, but you could have worse things in your diet than raw nuts. Walnuts are a good choice. It depends. About how much would you say you eat a day? How many?
Oh,
a handful?
A large handful.
Yeah. That's quite a bit. But
is there protein in nuts?
Yes, there is.
Yeah,
it's a nutritious choice.
They're all right, you know.
It would depend on how much other fat you have in your diet. If that was primarily your fat, I wouldn't see any problem with it. If you were getting a lot of other fat items in your diet, then there shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. Are some nuts bad and others also?
Cashews are pretty high in fat. Yeah.
What about pistachios?
I don't know. They're all high in fat, but I don't know where they fall in relation to some of the other nuts. Does anybody else know about pistachios?
Or almonds?
Almonds are a very good nut. Nut for nut. They're a very good nut. They tend to go rancid less quickly than many of the other nuts and lower in fat. That's a good choice.
When you were talking about Parmesan, is that one of the lower fat cheeses?
Mm-hmm. It is a lower fat cheese. It tends to be higher in salt a lot of times, but it's lower fat.
In the coffee pot yesterday, someone noticed you taking decaf coffee, and it's going to raise your cholesterol.
Yeah. Well, coffee has been linked to higher cholesterol.
Decaf?
Probably not decaf as much, although there's some caffeine in decaf. This is a better decaf, though, than a chemically processed decaf.
We'll do a case study here. We'll let her analyze. Everybody recognizes one of these.
Whoa.
Before we pass this around.
Butterfingers.
I don't know. I don't have my reading glasses on. I can't read the ingredients. Let's see what's in this.
50 words that I can't pronounce. Whoa. It starts off with sugar and corn syrup and roasted peanuts and palm kernel or coconut oil or soybean
oil.
Okay,
palm oil. That's something that's used a lot.
Saturated. It's a saturated fat.
Highly saturated fat. That's what all the theaters put on their popcorn.
Palm oil.
Uh-huh.
A good point to take your own
palm oil, not butter?
Popcorn.
And microwave popcorn is extremely
high
in fat.
Yeah. And oftentimes there are chemicals, too, in microwave popcorn that are not in.
You can just play microwave
popcorn. They don't.
That's true. Well, this would give you a lot of sugar.
No, there wasn't any.
A lot of fat. Did you want me to go on? I think that's. What was I looking for in that?
Oh, I was hoping there would be the usual polyunsaturated or partially hydrogenated something.
Something after the buttermilk solids. No.
Not too bad.
Bag it.
A lot of bad stuff, a whole bunch of words I can't pronounce here. Who will save him from this butterfingers?
If we cut it up in small enough portions and divide it up, then it won't kill anybody.
One little tiny taste. Well, how about if we go on a bit? You can stop me if you have some questions. What about taking omega-3 fatty acid supplements? Do you think that's a good idea?
Yes.
What'd you say?
Taking omega-3 fatty acid supplements, the capsules.
Like what would that be?
It's fish oil.
Fish oil?
Yeah.
Cod oil or something?
I think it'd be all right.
Maybe in small amounts, but the recommendation now, the current recommendation, is not to consume a lot of that. It can cause internal bleeding. And the recommendation is to get your fish oil. That's not saying all omega-3, but the fish oils from the fish rather than from the capsule, unless you're under doctor's supervision and somebody's really watching you closely and has prescribed this for a special reason. But flaxseed oil, also known as linseed oil, food grade, is very high in omega-3. It's the highest. Yeah, and 6. So that's a good choice. Walnut oil, flaxseed oil, and walnut oil are both good choices. In moderation, it would be very helpful. Where do you get it?
Or what do you get it in?
flax seeds.
I mean,
wait, what are you talking about? Oh, you're talking about where do you buy it?
Hardware store.
Yeah. Well, we do. We put it in the stain for the house.
Yeah.
That's not the kind you want. The only kind that you would want to use is refrigerated. It comes in an opaque brown bottle. You would find it at health food stores. Spectrum is a good brand. If any of you shop at Puget Consumer Co-op, they carry it. There's a doctor in Germany who's used flaxseed oil in the treatment of cancer and had quite good results, mixing it with cottage cheese and making a dip out of it or whatever.
Could you use that to cook with or the heat changes?
I wouldn't cook with it. I would either use it in a salad dressing or find another way to incorporate it into your diet and heat it.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, it's hard to judge how high a temperature you're getting. And again, if you get, I'm not familiar with that particular oil, but I would say if you're getting above 360 degrees in temperature, you would again be creating trans fatty acids in the heating of that oil.
That's my next question. How about like polyunsaturated oil to cook you? That you get it too hot and then it's ruined, right?
Mm-hmm. If your oil starts smoking, you want to discard it and start over and keep your heat very low, a low flame or on low. On the
that means that everything you buy in a fast food place is ruined with burnt oil.
Those oils are not only heated to high temperature, they're not changed very often. And one person that I know toured, it was one of the co-op brands of corn chips. So it was more of a health-oriented factory where they were making corn chips. They changed the oil once a month. Made me think that I don't think I want to eat those anymore. There are some great chips now that are baked, but the stuff that this old oil that is heated over and over again, not only do you have a high amount of trans fatty acids, you've got all this other garbage in there that's fallen in. Been heated over and over and over again, so it's hard to say what is in there, but highly carcinogenic. So, yeah, fast food,
cancer
fried,
city.
Yeah, items are something to stay away from.
Gut bombs.
I have another question for you. Which sweetener do you think is the most desirable choice? Sucrose, fructose, or honey?
Honey.
Fructose is the worst.
What products have fructose in it?
It's in all sorts of things, from sugar. I love the sugar-free yogurts. The first ingredient is fructose. All sorts of. The latest theory, according to the biochemists that I've been hearing, is that fructose bypasses the normal metabolism that even sugar, sucrose, would go through, and has immediate rush right into. It doesn't
so
go through even the normal processing. Where does it enter your blood? Well, it gets processed. It gets metabolized into your bloodstream eventually. But
it's
sucrose.
The speed of the rise.
Right. It's the initial rush of sugar. It just happens very, very fast. In fact, it happens faster than sucrose. And so
the negative part is that it's a quicker sugar.
High elevation, yeah, in your blood sugar. So for that reason, it's the least desirable of the sugars.
It challenges the pancreas too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the choice then?
Well, of those three, my bias would be toward the honey. But there's something that I think is even better, and that's brown rice syrup. Has anybody ever tried that? Or malt barley syrup? And you can find that now at a lot of health food stores and at the co-op, and it's in the honey section. It looks much like honey. Brown rice syrup, the theory is, and there aren't, to my knowledge, studies on this, but the theory is that it's metabolized much more slowly. And the feedback that I'm getting from a lot of people that I respect is that it's over about a 2-hour period rather than very quickly. So it's much easier to deal with for the pancreas.
What are the problems with honey?
Well, only that it goes into the bloodstream faster would be creating a elevated blood sugar level faster. But it's a better choice than sucrose or fructose. But the best choice would be brown rice syrup or malt barley syrup. There are also some fruit juice concentrates, too, that are better choices than honey.
Okay, now, for those of us single guys who have to go shopping for ourselves, we walk down the, we go to supermarkets, we don't know how to ferret out the food stores. And so we're walking down the aisle, and, okay, you're going down the eggs and milk and cheese, so what do you pick? You saying buy butter instead of margarine?
Yes.
Skim milk.
Skip the eggs altogether?
No, I didn't say that. In fact, I don't. The latest that I'm hearing is that the egg is not so bad. It's gotten terrible press for a lot of years. The recommendation now is about 4 eggs a week.
Yeah. Does it make any difference if it's all at once or one every day?
4 eggs in one setting?
Well,
Well, this is supposed to be the latest tips in nutrition, so I'm giving you the latest stuff that I've heard just very recently from incredible sources.
Egg beaters that are on the market, do you know?
What do I think of egg beaters? I don't think they're a whole food. I think they're a processed food. And any time you get into tampering with a product, you get further and further away from the quality of that food. My feeling is that egg beaters are not a good choice. My gut level feeling, it's not a whole food. It's been processed. I would rather see you take the whole egg. And if you want to, if you're worried about cholesterol, you could add an extra egg white. Versus, like if you were making an omelet, you could add more egg white and save the yolk for something else for later, or toss it if you want to. But I'd rather see you go with a whole egg.
It just shows how to separate.
And for you, see.
Just try and eat as natural as we possibly can.
Yes.
And stay away from the packaged and the frozen dinners and anything that somebody has bought the product and boxed it up for us. That's a no-no. Go to the natural product as you possibly can.
That's definitely my feeling and a lot of people that I respect. Whole foods, the more that we can eat the whole food in its natural state, the more nutrition we're going to be, and I believe the healthier we will be. And now that we're talking about that, I'd like to recommend a book called Golbeck's Guide to Good Food. This is an excellent book talking about whole foods. I think it would be great reading if you're interested in the subject. Anytime you start tampering with food, you start losing its nutritive value. And the more that foods are tampered with, the more stuff that's added in to make it look natural. It's a very strange process we have going on. I just looked at the soybean for a presentation I did, and soybeans are an excellent source of protein, and they're used for a lot of things today. But the more that you start tampering with it, getting down to soy isolates, which are used a lot now in as meat fillers. They're putting it in, especially in fast food restaurants, in with hamburger and chicken and all sorts of things, and adding a lot of soy isolate. But soy isolates are so processed that they're adding in colorings and preservatives and flavorings and all sorts of things to make it look natural, and we've destroyed the whole idea.
Where does tofu fit in on that soybean? How close to natural soy is that?
Very close.
Very close.
Yes. Very high up on the list. And it's a very good choice, and a good choice for an alternative for protein.
What does tofu come from?
Soybean.
Oh.
Yeah.
What about a soybean margarine? Is that...
Who's speaking? Where are you? Up here. Soybean margarine. I've never seen that. Have you? You've tried it? I have. Oh, from oil, from soy oil.
Yeah. Soy.
The temperature process.
Again. That's right. You're gonna get. I can't believe that they could make a margarine without heating it above 400 degrees. And again, you're going to have trans fatty acids when you get into those high temperatures. So I wouldn't go for it.
Is there anything better than just water to wash fruits and vegetables in?
Vinegar and water. Vinegar and water. She said to wash fruits and vegetables in.
Why would you do that?
As a cleansing process to get off resins and sprays and fungus that's on the fruit and vegetables.
I got one more. As a nutritionist, this friend of mine also told me that to buy the types of foods that are in season and indigenous to the area where you're living, because those foods are designed to help your body prepare for the climate. In other words, if we import a lot of oranges from Florida this time of the year, and this is not a good substitute, because you live in the Pacific Northwest, you should be eating roots and nuts and whatever else is normal food for this area at this time of the year. That's where your diet should be centered. Can you comment on that philosophy?
Yes. I've read that. That definitely falls into the macrobiotic philosophy. I know that they're very strong. The people who are macrobiotic in philosophy believe that very, very strongly. My personal feeling is, and I would agree with that, it's so tough just to get people to eat whole natural foods that I don't even concentrate or think much about that, because just to get people to eat a whole orange versus orange juice that has all this stuff added to it, maybe it's very tough. So that's fine-tuning your nutrition. And for those people that really want to fine-tune what they're doing, I think it's a great idea. I've not experimented even with it myself personally, so I don't know even on a very subjective level. I have no anecdotal stories but to tell. Do you know anything? Has your friend tried that and experienced healthful results?
Well, I have one friend that eats that way. He's strictly vegetarian, and he also kind of follows that plan.
I think it would be an
Works
excellent
well
idea.
For him. He doesn't get colds when the rest of us do, and you know, I think in the long run it shows up in his overall health, because the guy has a job that's about half outside most of the time too, and then he's an outdoorsman, mm-hmm. mountain climber, skier anyway, and that's basically the way he eats.
I had heard that about honey, that you should eat honey that's coming out of the area in which you live.
Mm-hmm.
And that would maybe eliminate some pollen problems that you might develop with something.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent idea. And for those that
can... But now we
can
eat honey, I just found out.
Well, I didn't say you couldn't have any honey. I'm just giving you some different choices and some ideas, but you can have honey.
Sure. Yeah. If you're gonna go out and eat a steak, or if you have a steak done, which would be the most helpful way to eat it? Rare or very well done?
What a controversy that is. There is such a good chapter in this book on this subject. Charred steak is not good, but I'm coming to believe that very rare meat and bloody meat is not good either, because of the treatment of our animals today. After studying what is happening in the cattle industry and what we are eating, it's real scary what we're ingesting in meat that is not well cooked and how the cattle is raised. And I'm becoming really cautious about rare meat, any kind of rare meat.
What are you talking about? Hormones or things they inject?
Oh, yes. Antibiotics are without question poured over and over and over again into animal feed, and they're poured in to cause the animal to grow quickly, so that
a lot of that's a fallacy. I've been in the meat business basically all my life.
They don't do that in there.
A lot of the antibiotics and growth stimulants and steroids and stuff, they did away with it. But it's still,
everyone believes
totally
it.
Paranoid about it. But there is a certain amount, mm-hmm. just to maintain their health. I mean, if a beef gets sick, you have to give them something for it.
Well, they keep them in, most of them now keep them in close quarters, in small pens. They're very close. And in that kind of close proximity, they tend to get more diseases, more problems. And so they have to give them more antibiotics just to keep them healthy, where if they were free range, they wouldn't have to do that. And the sanitary aspect of just keeping them that close range, is it makes it tougher to keep them healthy. I haven't been out there and I haven't researched what's happening from ranch to ranch, so I don't know.
Can you cook that antibiotic out of the meat then?
No.
The cooking changes?
No. It's not, the cooking is not going to change the effect of the antibiotic on the meat. But the idea is that now so many of the animals are diseased and come with problems that it's better to cook it than to eat it very rare.
And that would be true with chicken and turkey also.
Yes,
more,
it's
so,
more
poultry,
so with poultry.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the conditions now in raising poultry is worse even than the cow. They're kept in small cages, most of them. And that creates a lot of stress for the animal and lowers the animal's immunity and also the sanitary conditions. So there are many more problems.
Is it difficult to get organic poultry?
You can find organic poultry at the co-op.
Turkey.
Mm-hmm. You can find it there, although it's not without problems. I just finished a class through the co-op and talked with one of the people who deals a lot with the buying and knows a lot about it. And she said the poultry at the co-op even isn't without problems, but it's better than some of the others. And Larry's Market has one brand, Rocky the Range chickens. Have you heard of them? It's kind of a cute name. Supposedly, they are free-running chickens and have less problems. But how free they have just a little square to run in, maybe, I don't know.
What about Sherry? I was gonna talk about, want to talk a little bit about fresh fruit. A lot of people think that and if you're eating, like we had applesauce today for breakfast. Now, we lose the carbohydrate in the apple when the apple is squeezed into applesauce, correct?
The carbohydrate?
The carbohydrate. In the apple is a carbohydrate. It's a fresh carbohydrate, correct?
Complex, uh-huh.
Complex carbohydrate, whatever you call it. Any fruit is that way if it's in its natural form. But immediately when you press it and squeeze it or whatever we do to it when we try and preserve it, then we take that form of carbohydrate out of it.
What you're going to be losing is some of the vitamins. Anytime that you're cut, even to slice in, you lose some vitamin. But the more that you process and work with that fruit, the more vitamin content.
Frozen orange juice, for example, you know, to buy juice in a container or a frozen concentrate, which would be better as far as preservatives and whatever.
When you're talking about juice in a container, like a jar, jarred or canned, or
like a cardboard carton, kind of Minute Maid kind of stuff.
Again, that depends. It depends on what's been added to your product. You'd have to look between the brands and look at the label. But there's one thing about the cartons now that they don't tell you, and that is that many of them are being sprayed with preservatives, and they don't have the carton itself, and they don't have to list that on the label according to the law. So a lot of times with these cartons, you're going to be getting preservative that because they've sprayed the carton, but you would never know that because they don't have to tell you.
Is that true with frozen also?
I don't know. It could be from item to item. I don't know. I just know that in general, what is happening is that manufacturers are spraying cartons.
Mentioned microwave food, since that's a big deal for everybody in fast-paced society. I mean, that's an interesting
research
and discussion.
I'll tell you, and then I'm going to duck and run quickly out of the room. This is a very controversial subject, and I don't know anyone who's done an official study. Do you know of anyone who's done an official scientific study? I'm not aware of, but I'm aware of people ahead.
Electromagnetic studies, I think they are doing.
There's a book called The Microwave Conspiracy, The Zapping of America,
I don't have a microwave and I don't believe in it, but go ahead.
We don't have one either. So. In this book, they talk about the leakage, and the standards here are very lax in our country compared to other countries, just the leakage and the control of that. So that's one factor to think about. The other factor to think about, and this is anecdotal, but Pottinger has a clinic in California. Are you familiar with Dr. Pottinger, the Pottinger Institute? This is an unpublished study, so this is hearsay and more anecdotal information, but apparently there was the Pottinger cat study, and he had three groups of cats, and there was a raw foods cat group and a cooked foods cat group and a microfood cat group. And the raw foods group, as you can imagine, fared best health-wise, birth defects for their offspring, and degenerative diseases. And the cooked foods group that got similar food to the standard American diet, the SAD diet that we eat, fared about like we do in birth defects and degenerative diseases. The microwaved cats group very early on got tumors and many degenerative diseases and many, many birth defects in that group of cats. So in some of the NDs that I've talked to that are in private practice feel very, very strongly about microwave ovens and caution their patients not to have one.
Changes the enzymes and things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it cooks from the inside out, is my understanding of it, and does change. It's got to change the molecular structure. What it's doing to us, we don't know for sure. But I'm very, very cautious about microwave ovens.
I just use mine. Same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're so it's better not to use them like for vegetables, because I thought it was supposed to, since it cooked quickly, that you were saving more vitamins in your vegetables.
A standard registered dietitian would tell you that's probably the best way to cook your vegetables, because they're measuring vitamin content. I think we have to look at everything holistically and get a good picture of what's happening overall, not just how many vitamins and minerals are in here, but what else is happening to our food and to our product and to our home and our environment, and in looking at the whole picture.
Okay.